Welcome to The Hidden World of Women, a podcast brought to you by Women's Health and Wellbeing Services. My name is Emma and I'll be your host for today's episode.
Today I'm joined by another absolutely fantastic woman. Kaya is a mum. She loves spending time with her family. She's an ocean girl who loves her pets and particular dogs. So of course we have to get on because dog lovers are my people. She loves dancing and music and travel. And she also loves her job. So her job she describes as a professional organiser and declutterer. So thank you very much for joining me today, Kaya.
Ah, thank you so much for having me. It's a privilege.
So I'm really excited because as you can see around my office, I really could do with any tips around decluttering. So can we start by telling me what is a professional declutterer?
I think the best way to describe it is people need maintenance with their housework, so cleaning, general cleaning, then there's gardening and there's like repairs, but a lot of the time people forget about the cupboards. And that is where it becomes a mess and a trap. And so from when you then get stuck in this field of figuring out what to do, or we just accumulate too much and we don't know how to get rid of it, then you get a professional in with a different viewpoint and clearer eyes, and someone can guide you through that process.
Somebody who's perhaps not quite as attached to the sentimental plastic, you know, container that's underneath that, you know, the corner cupboard that all the stuff gets caught in.
Oh, tell me about it. Yeah. Yeah, so I think it's more about just seeing it from like no judgment. There's never any judgment. It's actually like, for me, I see it like a puzzle, and I've seen it so many since everything you can imagine. So how do I figure out this puzzle for this person, and how can I best benefit them in the time that we have? And from my experience and what I've heard, I feel like this is probably the most common thread throughout a lot of other professional organisers and declutterers.
Yeah. How did you get into being a professional declutterer and organiser?
I was a support worker for 5 years for young adults with disabilities, and I was their community access. So I did learn a lot from that experience as I was stepping into people's homes and supporting them. I noticed that I was learning to engage in their own private spaces, which obviously is quite overwhelming when you first meet someone. And then learning how to be at ease in myself would allow them to also feel relaxed. So that was a big skill I learned through that job. But obviously I had a lot more to give and offer in this decluttering, aesthetics, organizing field. And my husband was just like, out of nowhere one day, I said, why don't you just run your own decluttering business? And I was like, oh yeah. And that's literally how it kind of started. And then just put the pieces together and started going social media and business cards and word of mouth, and then it just started.
So how long have you been doing it now?
4 years. Oh, yes. Yeah.
And in that 4 years, what's been your steepest learning curve?
To really like not judge the situation.
Yeah.
As in, obviously people think I judge them, but that's the point I also try to make, is that not judging someone's development or process and like being really careful around that. It can be quite sensitive topic, and obviously you're stepping into someone's house, and like it surprises me how quickly they can trust me, that like they see me, they trust me, and they want me to help.
Yeah.
And so that's been a really big eye-opening experience. And also then coming away from that experience and not pushing it to happen again. So naturally, you know, you want to make money and, you know, sales and pitched to your clients to keep getting booked, you know, so that you have this repeat client. But what I've noticed when I've done that in the past is that you're pushing something that's not ready, and it never works out. So that was another great experience, is that it's all about connection and energy, and when the energy and the connection is right, everything can happen.
Yeah. So tell me what the process is like for when you go in and you're like, what is the decluttering? I guess I have this idea of probably seen something on TV where they take everything out of the house and put it in a big shed, and you've got to, you know, no matter what, you need to throw out 60% of it, and you're only allowed to take this home with you. And I'm assuming that you don't actually take everything out of somebody's house and put it on their back garden.
No. people do get a little bit like, honestly, it's... The process should always come from the person. So I could never be able to tell you to throw something out. Like, that goes against my complete value. Like, I just would not sit right with me. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't be able to sleep. So I'm there as a facilitator. I'm like doing the energy work. I'll come in. So for example, your question was like, what does it look like?
Yeah.
So I do like a 30-minute meet and greet. Mm-hmm. We talk about our goals for the day and, you know, long-term, short-term goals. And, you know, just a little bit of like where I'm at, like my life, why am I overwhelmed? You know, as in like the client will explain to me these stories. So we're kind of getting to know each other. And obviously we got to figure out how are we going to work well. And so it might be that we're both just like quiet workers and we can just get on with the task at a time, or we might be just chatting away and it becomes that actually a really fun experience. And so the 30 minutes is basically just getting to know each other. And then after that, we are like, right, let's do the work. And then I break it down to 3 hours. Mm-hmm. And from my observation, a lot of other companies do the same amount of time. It's either 3 hours or 3.5 hours, maximum 4, because it is a lot to deal with. And people sometimes say, oh, but I want to do 5 or whatever. And I'm like, okay.
Can we just do 14 hours straight? And let's I might be able see. To do the whole hour.
Let's see how you go after 3 hours and you really hit a wall. Like you can't make decisions after that. So it's using that time wisely. Otherwise, you're just walking in circles. Mm. So that's how I've like come up with this sort of structure. And then I take away, I offer in my service an op shop drop off, just to get like for the people to get it out of their house is like the biggest step, and also that feeling of being able to let go and give something back to the community
without having to have it in your boot and drive around with it in the boot for at least 2 weeks. Like, I'm not sure that makes sense.
And I don't do that.
I'm not keeping else's stuff in my boot for 2 weeks.
My husband would be like, no. So, but yeah, that's definitely exactly the reason why I provide that in my service. And then there's obviously, you know, a pile of rubbish, and then there's things that the people keep, and then that goes back, or, you know, it stays within the space, and then we just allocate it in the right way so that it's all about trying to find a home for each item, which is going to help you, you know, avoid more clutter, as in like disorganization and the frustration around memory and working with different people in the house. I mean, living with people is always going to be tricky, right?
Yeah. I mean, I saw something on social media that said something like tips for keeping your house clean and organized. And one is don't have children. And the other one was don't get married.
So exactly.
Live by yourself alone.
Exactly. And then, exactly. Yeah.
You know, maybe not the not the best advice to give.
It's you gotta laugh at it, and at the same time it's a ripple effect. So for like, you got all the behavior and it does inspire the other family members to get involved. There is another approach which can be, you know, it's very beneficial, and that's done by Marie Kondo, is that every single person in the house that lives in that house must participate in the process for it to be completely, you know, I totally agree with that. But at the same time, that's not my approach, because I feel like a lot will end up not doing it at all.
Yeah.
And then it's like this thing of like this big mole, you know, out of like you make this huge mountain out of a tiny little molehill, where you're like, it's actually the burden of the idea that it's hard is actually the reason why you got to that place in the first,
in the first place. There's only 5 people in my house, but trying to find time when 5 of us have got 3.5 hours at the same time, it would never get done.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm just wondering if we can just take a step back to one of the first things you said, which was around overwhelm and people feeling overwhelmed. Do you experience common themes for why people are experiencing overwhelm?
Yeah, it's a sad position to be in. Like, imagine you're so overwhelmed by your own stuff that you literally get to that point where, like, I don't know what to do.
Yeah.
So then you ask a professional to come in, and sometimes before that you might ask a friend or a family member or your partner or whatever, but eventually it never really gives you the satisfaction you're looking for. It causes more drama. I think that's a big topic, and it can go into so many different, like, avenues, obviously. But the main theme that I come up against is neurodiversity, burnout, being, you know, mum fatigue,
yeah,
being alone, like not having support from your partner or from your family, and also just the accumulation that we are living in. So those are the main factors, I'd say. And then also, like I said, I think now there's a niche to see that there is a need to clear out the spaces. I also think after COVID, people started to notice how much stuff they actually had in their homes, and then they started to reflect on that and learn to work with it better. So then they were searching for more help, and that's why this is, like, kind of, in a way, becoming a very popular topic.
Mm.
Yeah.
I'm wondering, so you said before people engage professionals, they might, you know, ask friends to come in or ask partners or relatives. Mm-hmm. I wonder how many people experience shame and that being one of the reasons why they would actually engage professionals rather than asking friends or relatives. Yeah. And do you see that often? Do you see the shame, and how do you respond to that?
Yeah, just recently that happened where, it's a tricky one. Because I'm there to help with no judgment, but obviously there's this thing that blocks us from accepting help when we're in shame. And that's this thing of, like, I've done something wrong, so therefore I'm broken.
Yeah.
And also that idea of needing someone to help you means that you need fixing. But my biggest message I'm trying to portray through every session I have is that no, it's not about that. It's about understanding, like, we all need support in all different areas of our lives. We're not all professionals in every area.
Yeah.
That's okay.
Yeah.
So just get rid of it. Like, literally just take it out of the equation and let's just make this fun.
Yeah.
And then, like, stop worrying about it. And then sometimes that happens at the start, and then we work through it, and it's like we just keep saying it over and over again. Like, you know, even just taking that first step is a huge thing. Like a huge milestone in someone's life. That could have been 30 years of their life in a house where no one stepped in. They feel shame for anyone coming in. So I just really hope that I can help with that as well.
Yeah. It's just reminded me, so probably a few years ago now, because I think, I'm pretty sure it was pre-COVID, but, like, time is so weird.
I know, I had to check it today. I was like, that was 2019.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Exactly. So I was giving a self-care presentation.
Oh,
I think it was self-care. Anyway, it was one of those kinds of things. And I was speaking about how the importance of actually asking for help and the importance of not carrying the entire load by yourself, particularly for women. And a participant in the audience said, you know, one of the things that was really helpful for her was that she works full-time, but she always felt as though she needed to do all of the housework, she needed to do all of that because that's what women do. And then somebody said to her, actually, you know, if you employ a cleaner, you're giving another woman, you know, financial independence. And that completely flicked her mindset that by employing somebody, she was actually not only getting her house clean, but she was supporting somebody else financially as well. And all of a sudden it then became, well, it's not shameful that I need to ask for help. Actually, I'm helping somebody else.
That's right.
But it's just the different things we can do to try and shift our mindset that actually it is okay to not be able to do everything by ourselves.
Like, it's like me saying, why can't I fix my car?
Yeah.
Like, I can't fix my car. I don't know that.
Yeah. Probably don't attempt open heart surgery on yourself.
Exactly. Like, I'm not a gardener. I'm not a plumber. I'm not any of those things. So every area of your life requires some assistance. And yes, you should see it like this big community of people all helping one another with their different skills. That's why our democracy hopefully is getting stronger. But, like, we should all be thinking of each other in a way as like a puzzle again, where we're all just putting the pieces together and we're making it, like, more the wholesome experience.
Yeah.
Because if we try to do it on our own, we're like an island and no one can come in, and it's blocking all that development.
Yeah. And as you say, it's really difficult to do things when you're experiencing overwhelm. For some people as well, they weren't taught how to do this. And, you know, so I was speaking to somebody who was saying, you know, I've told her to clean her room and she just looks at it. Have you told her what the first step is?
Yeah.
So sometimes that first step is we need somebody to come in to actually help out. Yeah.
Definitely. Yeah. Like I love hearing that now when my friends will say, you know, oh, I decluttered the room and we're channeling your energy, because they see it as like, oh, yeah, that's a step that we need to participate in. And I think that also comes from like that way of parenting and modeling, and it's like making it a fun thing, or making it like an accomplishment.
Yeah.
Not like, oh, you never do it.
Yeah.
And why are you so bad at that? That comes from a negative standpoint. So it is exciting to hear the stories becoming more positive around this area. And actually what happens is like, so I work with, when I do this work, I'm working with the law of giving and receiving.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes someone might have never, ever given something away without expecting something back.
Yeah.
And the minute they do it, it's like I watch it unfold and it's incredible. And then all these other positive experiences start to happen. And it's like, I know it sounds a bit cliche, but it really does work. So even just teaching your child to donate a toy, and then they can start to see how that, like, they feel grateful that they have something that someone else might not have. I mean, it's we know this story, right? But we just need to constantly reinforce it in a positive way.
To be reminded, that's it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And what I loved about one of the things that you were just saying is taking the opportunity to celebrate.
Mm.
And so often we don't. You're right. So often we see things as, you know, it's a negative self-talk of I haven't done this and I should have done that, or you should have done this and you should have done that. And we forget to actually take a moment to celebrate the positives and celebrate what we have done.
Yeah.
So it's really awesome to see that message being flipped around and saying, well, actually, okay, so the whole house isn't done, but I decluttered this room and this felt really great, and now experiencing these positives. So, how organized is your house?
Well, it's hard for me to judge that,
because fair enough.
I will probably say not enough, but then other
somebody
people would be like,
yeah.
So I've learned to find a happy medium. My whole objective is, how much housework do I really want to do?
None.
After 16 years of doing it, I still don't want to do it, but I do it because I know it's providing a service for my family, and yes, they need to help out and da da da. So I always try to find the quickest way, and that's my whole like logic around anything to do with work, is that you should try to make it easy and fun.
Yeah.
And so when you have less stuff, obviously it's going to be easier.
Yeah.
So that's my whole practicality around it. Yeah. And everything has a home and it's simplified. I still have my husband saying to me, like, oh, where's his thing? And I let him have that space. If he wants to be, you know, the way he is with his stuff, that's fine. Because the other side of it is that you don't want to control to the point of making, like, it's neurotic.
Yeah.
And everyone is like, not knowing where to put things. You also want your family to feel relaxed. So it's finding that happy medium.
Yeah.
But still making sure everyone's sort of accountable for their own space and their own stuff. I think that's my way of, you know, teenage boys and whatnot.
Yeah.
Hopefully got some positive messages through there.
Yeah. You've spoken a couple of times about decluttering being fun.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me more about that.
Like today, okay. So I won't, you know, go into personal details, but it was so nice at the end. Oh. So we were sort of figuring out how to rearrange one of the spaces.
So was this the first time you met with this client?
Yeah. Today. So we had went through, you know, a few rooms and blah, blah, blah. And then I kept sort of like mentioning, oh, you know, this would look really good here, and like how the energy would work and what we could open up if we did that. And then at the end we had some time, so we did it. And I just kept feeling like it needs something else. It's like something is missing. And so this is after like 3 hours of pretty much, you know, going through all the rooms and chatting and making it fun. And the reason why it's fun is because you're doing it with someone else.
Yeah.
Because if you have to do everything on your own all the time, it does get boring. And if that's not something you love to do, then obviously it will be even harder. So doing it with someone else is going to make it more fun. And if hopefully you get along and it works. And that's what I mean by connection. But anyway, at the end, and then she said, oh, I saw her running outside and she like picked some roses off her bush and made a vase and put it on the mantelpiece and the table. And she's like, I just had to go do it. I just needed to like put some flowers there. Yeah. And it was the point that I was trying to make from the beginning is that something was missing, some energy was missing, some life, some. And so seeing her at the end realize how it's a fun thing, like to make it beautiful.
Yeah.
That's the message. Because it does look like when you go to a really nice, I don't know, you notice a difference, right? You go to someone's house or you go to, let's say, a showroom or whatever. And it does, it lights you up. You see the room and it gives you the sense of like, oh, something. Not everyone sees it, but majority of us do. Subconsciously, we notice it. When something makes us feel good, it's probably because someone put a bit of effort into it, you know?
Which goes into kind of where I was going to ask next is around the idea that when you declutter, that it becomes sterile. You know, because in middle, if you take minimalist to the extreme, there's nothing left. There's no personality in the room. It's just white walls, nothing, you know, no pictures, no ornaments. It's just so.
That's a bit of a stigma, I think, from TV shows and, you know, the way that they brand that whole movement.
Yeah.
I mean, that minimalism and decluttering, this kind of sit side by side, but they're not really the same thing. Because I will, again, like if someone has a picture and it's like, it could be the most random thing, honestly, and it sparks joy, then you must keep that.
Yeah.
So you could have like five of them. And should I turn around and say, oh, no, you need to only have one? Like, yeah, that would make you feel a bit like bleak and bored and stark. And so I'm not aiming for that as our goal. Our goal is just like functional. Like I always say, the three questions you can use for yourself if you're getting stuck. And the first one is, does it spark joy? Because obviously that's we all know that one. The second one is it looking old and tired? And or does it have a purpose? So like you can use all those three, and like even if it's like one of the three, then that's a reason to keep it.
Even if my husband has to stay.
Yeah. Well, that's good.
He'll be very happy to hear that, I'm sure.
Yeah, I use it for myself when I'm feeling a bit like, oh, what am I doing with this item, like whatever, some trinket or whatever. I also want to go back to this, like minimalism and having a family.
Yeah.
So when you're a mum with young kids, I always say, like, don't expect your house to look like a showroom.
Yeah.
Like, that's silly. No one lives like that. Even Marie Kondo just said it's unrealistic.
Yeah.
So, and she's, you know, what you got to, that's the other side of life is that unless you experience it, you don't know. So there's that empathy that comes from having kids and knowing how to then help someone feel like you're not a failure because the kids' toys are all left out. Like maybe that's another part of the overwhelm that women are finding, their self-judgment from social media, looking at images or thinking it's got to be a certain way.
Yeah.
They've put that on themselves.
Yeah.
And that's not realistic.
I was just thinking the same thing. So that, you know, the shame often, well, I believe comes from looking at other people's Instagram or Facebook photos and they've got, you know, this picture perfect family in this beautiful display home worthy living room. But actually what you don't see is behind the camera, there's baskets of washing and they've just like pushed all the toys out of the way to kind of create that. But you're comparing your living room that's got the eight baskets of washing and the toys that are still on the middle of the floor to this tiny snapshot of one particular part of somebody's life and one particular part of someone's home. So So it is really easy to think, well, everybody else has got it together.
Yeah.
Why can't I do it?
And that's really sad. Like, why would you want your child to stop playing? Like, we're getting so caught up in the wrong things. I still really truly believe that they should learn like those skills.
Yeah.
How to then, you know, manage their things and when it's enough and, you know, the law of giving, receiving and all of that. But it doesn't stop the creativity. Like, if you've got a really creative child, they're going to be always doing that. So it's kind of
if you've got a
taking away the judgment.
Yeah. So if you've got a child that climbs, there are always going to be footprints the entire way up your hallway wall.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I think it's like, it's like habits. You know, we create these little habits in the house so they know where their things are and they maintain their things and... But they can still be themselves.
Yeah.
That's kind of my approach, yeah.
So what kind of habits do you have in your household?
I like to have... The problem with clutter is clutter breeds clutter, right? So you have a dumping ground.
Yeah.
Everyone has one.
At least one.
But my habit for me is actually do the decluttering.
Yeah.
Like just do... Like I still do decluttering every 6 months. I go through my wardrobe. I go through my cupboards. And you know, there's always going to be some random thing that comes up and you just got to, it's like cleaning. It's the same. Or like gardening, you just got to keep doing it, but it's not a personal thing. Like I'm a bad person. It's just do it. You just have to do it. That's my only practical advice, honestly.
Just do it. Sadly, there's no shortcut.
And because I like doing it, it's not a job for me, but some people don't like doing it. So then they get professional in or they can download a PDF from, you know, there's thousands of different tips and whatever online now. So
when you were first starting out, where did you want Decluttering with Kaya? Where did you want that to go?
I suppose it's like, you know, every business, it's a little bit like at the start you think, oh my God, I'm going to be like this big success and then you sort of see yourself in the limelight a little bit. But then when reality kicks in, it's like, actually, that's not what fills me up. It's not to like go out and be like, I'm this declutterer and It's actually the best part of my work is when I see my client happy.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, like that job is done and I've helped someone. And even if they can't, doesn't matter. Even if in 2 days' time it's, well, in their mind, they might see it as bad or messy. But for me, it's like as long as I plant even one tiny seed that's positive for them, then that's a success.
Yeah.
And that's my approach now. Yeah.
So you're 4 years into it.
Mm-hmm.
What has been the most surprising thing for you?
As in what I have come across or just generally, like what's
both.
Surprising? I think it's to do with when people hold things so close to them and then they guilt themselves around the letting go. That bit I find I can't relate to it. So I don't have an issue with that. I know that can be an issue with a lot of people, right? Even my husband, he's very like, oh, but I've like grown up with this idea that like it's about shifting energy and letting go and moving on. So I kind of have that mentality. So I find it harder to relate to people if they're like even just rubbish.
Yeah.
Like, you know, literally just some random plastic thing that does not serve anything or doesn't look great, but still the environmental side, there's a lot of like, unfortunately people find it really hard they don't want to feel like they're contributing to the rubbish.
Yeah.
So then they don't get rid of it at all. And that's a big common
thread. It's really interesting, isn't it? Because it still exists. It just exists in a different space.
Yep. Also, the other thing that I use as a way of helping people through this is I say things, well, there's a couple of things you can say, but one of them is like at the end of the day, every single thing that this world has created will go back to the earth.
Yeah. Some things just might take a lot longer than others. Yeah.
But it's like not to guilt yourself over that process. Like, or you're not, it's not your fault that this that they made that product incorrectly, or that we are now struggling with lots of plastic. Or,
yeah.
So it's not like again, they blame themselves, like it's not your fault.
Yeah.
So it's okay to let go of it. Yeah. And that's, I find that the hardest, like just wanting to let people know that more and more, and it still can be a huge struggle. So yeah, that's the biggest surprise probably.
What is have you had an experience where you've gone somewhere and they've got, like, what's the most of something you've ever seen? So, for example, I was just tidying up my craft room and found 72 pairs of scissors.
Mm.
I don't think we need any more scissors. So,
well, I mean, crafty rooms tend to get double ups, that's for sure, and garages and, yeah, because it's like tools and that sort of thing. Yeah. Cleaning products, that's a big one. Food.
Mm.
I mean, clothes, not so much. Like, I've seen, like, there is obviously, you know, people can have a whole room just for clothes, right? Yeah. I mean, it is, again, I've stopped seeing it.
Yeah.
Like, I kind of got to a point where it's like, okay, how do we fix this?
Yeah.
And then what I'll say at the end of that will be like, okay, now you're at full capacity.
Yeah.
Like, take away all of that. Just like, all right, this cupboard is full. You're at full capacity.
Yeah.
Then if you want to buy more things, and this is something that I'm advising, doesn't mean you go and do it, but I do it for myself as one in, one out.
Yeah.
Just keep that rule. And then it sort of simplifies, because the reason why obviously someone's got me in is that they're overwhelmed. They don't know how to manage it. So then I hope that these little tips will like make them think, oh, well, I'll get rid of that old jumper I don't never wear, so I can buy this nice one. So you can still enjoy things.
Yeah.
It's just like have balance as well. Yeah.
So you said that you started this because your husband gave you the idea.
Mm-hmm.
How did you actually start? Because it's quite a niche environment. It's quite a niche role, isn't it?
My dad was like very particular and very, very like, I would say compared to me, like, you know, 50% more like in, you know, intense with cleaning and having everything put away a certain way.
Yeah.
And that's obviously where I learned it.
Yeah.
But then I wanted to study interior decoration, like ever since I was, you know, 11, 12. I love interiors. So for me, that was like always pleasing and aesthetically like interesting. And then I did the support work. So as you know, it was like, doing bits and bobs, had my kids, da da da. Then I was like, oh, what am I going to do? So then I started doing support work because I wanted to help. I really like enjoy that process and human connection. And then that experience taught me how to listen and learn and make people feel safe, and going to different homes and looking at mental health and seeing obviously there's huge, huge niche and huge gap. And then I was looking, actually, I just did a certificate in education assistance. So I was thinking, oh, maybe I'll work with children. And then just, it was like a year of looking, constantly trying to find a place, and nothing was like grabbing.
Yeah.
I was like, this is really strange. Why, maybe I shouldn't do this.
Yeah.
And that's exactly when my husband sort of went, why don't you do your own thing?
Yeah.
And your skills, you've got this amazing skill set with interiors and design, aesthetics and cleaning and people. You can run your own business and you can do decluttering. And so that just sort of opened it up. And I did it for part-time. And it was, you know, obviously, again, let me just rephrase how lucky I was in that moment, because I have a supportive partner who wanted me to experience that and say go and challenge it. Let's see what happens without any of the constraints of, you know, financial situation and whatnot. But so I had that blessing, and I think that was a really beautiful opportunity for me to just sort of see what happened without this idea of like, oh, I must make such and such money. And I was obviously charging very little, and then I started to learn, okay, what do you know, how to revalue myself and that sort of thing. So I did a business course, and that really helped me like get some boundaries in place and learn how to get my word out, and it just expanded my business hugely, and everyone was like receiving it really well, and And then from there on, I just basically, I don't even advertise.
Yeah.
Honestly, it's not even, I do also like think again, when society needs something, they'll look for it. And so it's like the ebbs and flows through seasons as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How did you find it charging people?
Yeah, it was difficult at first because I come from this like mindset of like a hard worker, you know, like my parents both, you know, you work for someone, you get paid a certain amount and it's reliable and consistent, and then suddenly you have to like actually be the boss as well.
Yeah.
And then you're like, you know, your friends are interested, and so then how do you go around doing that? And then once I made it very clear, once I had a business coach sort of help me find how to create those boundaries, then it was like super easy after that. And then also like if I just started to compare myself to other companies in Perth, I feel like I was, I like the way she said it to me. She said, what level do you want to be at? Like, okay, imagine you're a product and you're a bottle of water. Do you want to be the really expensive one or the middle range one or the really cheap one?
Yeah.
I said middle. She said, all right, charge this then.
Yeah.
I was like, okay.
Sweet.
Sweet. And then it took away my whole like, oh, not worth it sort of thing out of the equation. And then actually people were like, oh, yeah, of course. Because that's the other thing that, you know, naturally I probably do that to myself too. It's like, oh, because this is a job that I didn't get qualified in, as in I didn't go to a, you know, school and blah, 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 blah. Therefore, I'm not like should be valued for what I do. But even just the other day, my stepson reminded me, he's like, but you are qualified because you do the job.
Yeah, you've got and how many years of experience.
Not many other people can do that. And that's your skill and gift.
Yeah.
And I'm like, So, yeah, it's good to be reminded.
Yeah, most definitely. I feel like a lot of women struggle with the actual charging part, and particularly as you say, when it's friends who want to hire you,
you're
like, oh, it just feels so awkward and uncomfortable, and but it's just getting over that.
I think say it straight away, so it's not uncomfortable later.
Yeah,
I'm a bit like I don't have an issue with like speaking what I feel, but it's better to just be like clear about who you are.
Yeah, yeah,
and then it's like okay. That takes away any of the uncomfortability. So, hopefully, But now it's just like online. Obviously, everything's online. You can don't even have to talk about the money half the time.
Yeah, so nice. So this is a job that probably didn't exist 20 years ago, and it's not one that you get qualified in.
Mm-hmm.
But you mentioned that you went and did a business course and you work with a business coach. So what are your thoughts for if somebody's listening to this and they've got an idea around, you know, where their skill set lies that isn't necessarily, it's not necessarily a current job, it's not necessarily an industry that exists or a role that exists, what would your suggestions or advice be for them?
If it really does light you up though, like you just have to try it.
Yeah.
And that's the thing, we have this idea that like one decision is the decision forever. There's no, like, I don't have that. So my job might change again. But I know what lights me up.
Yeah.
So I will continue to do that until it doesn't. And obviously having a supportive family or partner or whatever, or just your own mindset to, like, support you in the process to have a go and see what happens definitely helps. But I'm sure if, you know, you believe it's going to work and it's going to be beneficial, then it probably won't fail, you know? So it's like people always say to me, oh, I should do that job. So some people, you know, obviously born with that innate skill, and I do it because I can't see every house.
Like
I think we also get a little bit like stuck in this competitive mindset where, oh, they're doing it, so then I can't do it. Or if they're doing it, then I'm going to compete against them.
Yeah.
But it's like, no, because we can, you can benefit people over here and I can benefit people over there. And together we can, all of us can do it with, regardless of the skill. If you're doing it for the right reasons, then it will work.
And look, all of the business you know, business courses and marketing courses you do tell you that if somebody else is doing it, great, because that means there's a market for it. But just because nobody else is doing it doesn't mean that there isn't a market for it. People may not realize that they need it yet.
Definitely.
So, yeah, I totally agree. If it sparks joy, you know, if it excites you, if it lights you up, give it a crack. What's the worst that can happen?
Exactly. So. Yeah.
Now, you're surrounded and supported by loving, supportive family. Do you have some sort of like business network that you tap into for additional support, or to be able to go, oh, this isn't working, or yay, I've got something to celebrate? Have you got that as well?
Yeah, I bet that's also because my husband runs his own business. So I was just speaking about this with my bestie, and her husband works in company, whatever. But she wants to branch out and do her own thing. She has so much potential, but she doesn't believe that. And also because she doesn't have a partner that, he's never seen it modeled out. So he doesn't, obviously can't see it as like it can work. And so there's a lot of that self-doubt comes up. And I said, you know what, if you need to talk about it with me or someone else who's doing it, because you're just going to get a negative viewpoint. Not because he's a bad person, because he just can't imagine it working. And that's that beautiful like expansion where we all support one another. So that's why I think I have someone to go, oh, you know, it's sometimes, it is a lot of work, and you do wear a lot of the hats, and sometimes you wonder if it's going to work and blah, blah, blah. But then you have someone who's been through it before and, oh, yeah, that's normal. Oh, this is what happens. Oh, maybe you should try this. And so having that a person to reflect that with definitely helps. But it could be anyone, really. Doesn't necessarily need to be your partner. It's more like, naturally you want to reflect with your own family a lot to get that feedback. Sometimes you have to find it in other places.
We have a rule in our house: only one person is allowed to freak out at any one time. And there always has to be a black hat person. There always has to be somebody who can see the pitfalls and who can then go, well, here's some areas where things could go wrong, and here's some ways that we can put some things in place so that we can try and avoid those pitfalls. But if I'm the one who's being the black hat person about something I'm doing, he has to be there to pick me up, and he has to be there to go, yes, and here's what we can do to overcome those. If he's the one being the black hat person, well, then I've got to be the one who's there going,
And it is hard when you're on your own. And if you don't have a supportive, you know, if it's breaking out of these like stigmas and roles that we put ourselves into. But the biggest thing is to go back to the same thought, and that is, if it really lights you up, you will make money. Because it's energy, right? It's just energy. It's like maths. It's like an equation. You just like, you put the energy in and then you get some back, and it goes back and forth, back and forth. And like, obviously you can't, like, a good tip around running a business is like, the first 5 years are gonna be like, you know, that honeymoon phase where you go really, really up and really, really down. Like, you gotta learn a lot. But then once you get past that, there's actually, it most likely will work if you're still doing it for the right reasons as well.
So with that, is this the first business that you have run? What was your biggest learning curve?
That we all are struggling at some point. I think I kind of thought that, if I was struggling, therefore it would fail. And now I'm looking back and going, oh, that's so funny. Like, but that was a learning curve I had to go through. And that's also trusting in the space that the right people will come to you. Again, just keep putting out what you do, and if you're genuine and you're honest and you're like, have a good motivation and you're doing it for the right reasons and it fills you up, you will get the right people. And then the business will just naturally grow. And obviously this is a service, right? So word of mouth is the best way to get work. And also from my experience, a lot of clients that book me, sometimes I ask, oh, what was it about me that you booked? Why did you book me, sort of thing? And they were saying, oh, it's just one little line that you wrote, or your picture, something about your, you know, that your smile or this or that, like just a little thing. And then they felt like, okay, this is the right person for me.
Have you learned a lot about yourself?
Definitely learned that I have a very unique skill when it comes to being able to directly tell someone what they need to hear and helping them being able to make decisions. That's the biggest thing, is like that decision fatigue that's quite common. But I come in there like it's like I'm like coming in there like a sword, and I can just be very clear and sharp and direct. And that's probably why it works for me, because I don't get flustered in it and I can be like very clear. But then sometimes they need to hear that, because it's a little bit like if I just keep saying, let's give an example. It's like if something isn't serving you, or for example, someone I just work with who's moving house and they have this like, oh, but that person gave it to me.
Yeah.
And I'll say, well, like, how are they going to know? Do you think they care?
Mm.
Like being really kind of like direct. Yeah. And it's like a little bit painful because like, oh, yeah, they won't care.
Yeah.
Like, or like just sort of twist it around like that so that people can start to see their own story that they've been telling themselves. And it's actually not really like about the item at all.
That's a big kind of recurring theme, I think, is that, but somebody gave it to me. Mm. Well, did they give it to you so you would experience joy, or so you would hold on to it out of guilt?
Exactly.
Let's actually think about
that. Exactly.
Yeah.
So that's why I think that being able to be there to remind them sometimes, otherwise it'd be like, again, carrying around things for guilt.
Yeah.
Like, you don't need that.
Mm.
Yeah.
If other people thinking about going into a niche business, and what would you hope that their relatives would be telling them?
Definitely give it a go. Like, if it, again, like, we support you and we believe in you, and what have you got to lose? And if it makes you happy and it benefits others, then hopefully that's what their family members would say to them.
Yeah. Can you give, because I was trying to find practical ways that we can help people who might be listening who are in similar situations. And so the idea of I'll support you, can you give me some practical tips for ways that family can actually support people who are going into business, who are starting their own business?
By literally doing the work, because if you are too busy and you're like focusing on your business and there's all the other jobs to get done, that could be a first stepping stone, like having someone say, I'll pick up the kids, or I'll come and cook you a meal after a hard day. Like, it's almost like, you know, when you have a baby.
Yeah, I was just thinking that.
Yeah. And that's that women's circle thing that I find so exciting, because when my father's French, so when I'd go travel and hang out with my relatives, one of the biggest impressions I took away from that was like, after eating, all the women, and I'm not trying to put this into a stigma, but what I found beautiful about it was that all the women after eating would all hang out together in the kitchen and chat and clean and do the dishes, and it never felt like you were doing a chore.
Yeah.
It was just such a beautiful experience. And then all the men would go out and have their cup of coffee, because it's European, whatever. Yeah. And they'd all be chatting. And so there's like this, I think that's something we might have lost a little bit in this culture, is that we forget to like actually go, let's hang out and do it and like make it into a like enjoyable experience. I think like maybe it's the Western society that we're a little bit like, we just want everything done now, fix, 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 quick, quick, quick. And like, not really like knowing how that experience can benefit us is like, that would be my first tip, is like support someone, say, I believe in you and I can help in such and such, like very practical way, obviously. Then it's like providing your skills, if you have a skill set that you could use then to like help the person in their business journey. But my coach definitely did help in the way that just listening.
Yeah.
Just having like someone I could call if I was feeling like, I didn't know what I was doing. And their experience as well then helped me. So, and doing it in a group of women, that really helped as well.
Yeah.
Because I was, we all could like bounce off each other and – So that, yeah, joining a group of women in business, like doing with someone who's starting out as well, definitely helps.
I think it's helpful to join with somebody who's starting out, someone who's a couple of steps ahead, and someone who's a couple of steps ahead of them as well. So that way you don't feel like you're completely alone, but also you can see the next couple of steps.
And it's another way of networking, isn't it? So, but without it being all official and forced. Coffee dates, like catching up for coffee and talking about your ideas so that you can bounce your ideas off someone else, and you know maybe your partner doesn't want to give you that, whatever, it doesn't matter. It's just like find a friend or a family member or a work colleague, like they obviously if you're still in work and you're trying to leave that kind of setup.
I think though having somebody, so your partner, great, but having somebody outside of that, but just somebody outside of your own head, you know, like you get these ideas but they're just in an echo chamber. I need somebody to come in and go, but have you thought about it from this perspective? Or have you thought about, you know, hey, what about this? Like, this is obvious. Your husband coming in and going, you're trying all of these things, but this is where your skill set is. Why wouldn't you do this?
Exactly. There is like a little bit to be said around, like, are you investing into the wrong thing? So how to check in on that as well and know that, like, you're not just like wasting your time and energy, but sometimes you've got to go through that to get to the end. So it's hard to really say what is the right way to do it. It's more like just trust, like having someone around just to keep you in that positive mindset is really important, but also your own will has to be there.
Also, I think if we're thinking about support, then sharing people's pages on social media and liking their posts and all of those things don't cost anything. But also reevaluating where, I think for anybody who's listening, reevaluate where we're spending our money. Like we're all happy to go and waste money at Kmart or Target or you know, whatever that might be. But imagine like the joy that people feel when they get their first booking from from somebody who's not a friend or relative or make their first sale, whatever that is. Be part of that joy.
And so definitely. And you have to be quick. You have to act quickly because it's so quick, right? The industry, there's always something happening. So, whenever anyone asks me for like a review or like a, like you just said, you don't hesitate. You literally just grab your phone and do it straight away because it could mean three clients for them. And if you wait and wait, and you know, sometimes people say the same, like, oh, sorry, I didn't do your review and la, 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 la. And that's okay, whatever. But like the message I'm trying to make is like, you just do it. It doesn't have to be perfect. Just do it because it can be a huge influence. If I have three more reviews, then that's obviously going to make me feel good, and then the client who's going to book me will be like, oh, this is more legit. So we do work on reviews in this society, don't we?
And so that just lit me up because it's one of the things that I say a lot in the courses that I run, done is better than perfect. You know, just get it done. It doesn't need to be perfect. You can, for a lot of things, you can go back and you can change them and you can edit them. But just get some words on the paper or just, and for me, if I don't do the review then and there, I've forgotten it. I mean, I'm sat here at the moment with my to-do list wall. You know, I need to be able to see it. I need to just get it done. So, I definitely think, as you say, just do the Google review on the spot.
There's a three-level tactic we also use in, like, so I'm studying feng shui and how to then decide, because obviously you could, we can't make everything exactly right, right? Because you get superstitious and it's too much. But there's like best, better, and then there's like okay, good, you know? And even if you do the, any of those three, then that's fine. And like even if you just do okay today and good, that's still better than not at all. And then being like still uncomfortable because of where they're sleeping or whatever. So, yeah, that's my theory again, because not everything is perfect. Like the houses that we live in, they're not all going to be perfect. So we keep getting this idea, we get stuck on this idea, if it's not all perfect, then we can't do it at all. And that's, again, with starting a business. You kind of have to just be okay with not being perfect straight away and learn.
Or ever.
And it's not even the goal. The goal is not like, I don't want people to remember me as like, perfectionism. I want people to remember me as someone who was like listening and helpful and understanding and gave them some good advice.
Yeah.
And that's it really.
Yeah. Mm. So my takeaways from this are that just get started.
Yeah.
And also we need to spend less time being productive and more time connecting with people.
Yeah.
Yeah. Have you got any final thoughts for us before we wrap up?
Yeah, I really like what you just said just then, like get started, because that's a really big point. A lot of people that I follow that are declutterers, they all say the same thing. Even if you just did one drawer, like a week or one shelf or whatever, 10 minutes, I always say set an alarm.
Yeah.
Just do it and only do 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Because then you're not feeling like it's a chore. I want to take the chore away from it and make it more enjoyable.
Yeah.
That's the point, yeah.
I teach that with habits. So if you know that you've got to go exercise, put your walking shoes on and you're just going to go out for 5 minutes, or you're just going to set an alarm and you're going to go out for 10 minutes. Then if you choose to keep going after that, bonus. But if not, you've done 10 minutes.
Yeah.
So same thing.
Yeah.
You know, if you just spend 10 minutes decluttering the third drawer down, you'll be, you know, take you one step closer.
Yeah, definitely. Love it.
Thank you so much for your time today. I really appreciate it. And I'm going to go home and start emptying a drawer.
Channel me while you're doing it. Yeah.
Perfect. Oh. All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you for joining me for today's episode of A Hidden World of Women, a podcast brought to you by Women's Health and Wellbeing Services. For more information on the services we offer, head to whws.org.au or Women's Health and Wellbeing Services on YouTube and social media. Looking forward to the next episode where we uncover the hidden world of women.